Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge. Real talk about real issues.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. All right, guys, we're getting started a little late tonight. I am flustered, just got off of a very annoying traffic jam because there was a car accident with somebody that was driving a little too crazy and stalled the rest of everybody behind them. I want to thank all of you for hanging out with me and for joining in regardless. Well, let's thank God for another day of being here. We made it to the beginning of a new work week, and we had a hell of a showcase on Saturday with our brand new first grader co-host twins, Cameron and Jared Thompson. You know, did a pretty good job considering that they were a little bit nervous, but overall, we were proud of them. I want to thank Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City, currently with iSoulRadio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not gracing you on the radio, he is wowing you out there in New York City as the CEO of Track One Entertainment Company, that hot promotional company that gives you the best of live R&B events all over New York City in the best of venues with the best of entertainers, and he didn't stop there. Right now, everybody, as of February 11th, the brand new 2014 version of So You Think You Can Sing competition, that's like the local American Idol competition, will be underway. It will be on Tuesday, once again, February the 11th, 2014, it will be held at the Brooklyn Knights at 497 DeKalb Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Okay, doors will open, if I'm not mistaken, at 5 p.m., and the event goes on to 2 a.m. For those of you that are aspiring singers that's trying to be up and coming and you want to get your feet wet, this is the place to start. And you can hit up Barry for online registration at trackoneentertainment.web.com. Click on the So You Think You Can Sing flyer. Register in advance for $25 at the door on the day of the event. It will be $30. The On The Edge show will be one of the official sponsors. That means you will see me there if you are there. And I would love to meet all of you, and I will give all the blessings to those of you that are going to be in the contestant circle. Give big up to Barry Mason for offering this opportunity to us local people. And one of the things that he is doing is that since that is being held on the anniversary of Whitney Houston's death, they are doing a tribute to Whitney Houston. Those of you that are going to be contestants, you can choose from their 1,200 song playlist. And if you should happen to choose a Whitney Houston tune to sing, you will automatically get bonus points toward your final score with the judges in your audition. So that will be up to you totally. It's not mandatory, but if you do it, it'll give you an edge up. And we look forward to having a great time. So thanking Barry Mason for all that he does for us and everyone else that he meets. To my team, Lady Diamond and Lane Yeves, wishing her a fast recovery, which is beginning to happen. To DJ Dillmerker, Rodney Williams, recovering from his own family tragedies and still doing his thing. Monster Miles, our sports dude, he's going to be bringing you a hell of a lot because the Knicks are doing their thing out there. And so many other football teams and everything. And you know, Monster Miles does it with his raunchy little sassy tone, and we've been having some good times with that. And of course, last but not least, our favorite deacon, our favorite activist, one of our hot panelists here on the show, Deacon Zeddy Williams of Toledo, Ohio. And I can't thank him enough for all that he does for the communities that he touches, as well as for this show on and off the air. And, of course, you guys over there in my Facebook group, I'm not going to forget you, Black Love and Conversations group and the Real World Black News and Discussions group, and now my Black History Suppressed group. I want to thank you for always having an active pre-broadcast topic question discussion. I want to thank you for consistently giving me support and outreach and some topic suggestions, as well as some intriguing feedback. And boy, have we mixed it up today. Well, today is no exception. We have spoke about things to this effect quite a bit in the past few weeks, and we're going to continue this mission because of the fact that this is important. We, as an African-American community, definitely would want to try to figure out what it is that stops the power that we have from being on front page for ourselves. We want to be able to learn how to connect and reconnect out there with all the things that we are able to do to make us stronger. So tonight's question, everybody, is the boomerang effect, is internal triviality stagnating the progress of the African-American community? What we are going to be speaking on is things that we've touched on before, but we're going to mix it up all together tonight, because there's three categories in particular that I want to ask you. Do you believe racism from the outside world is a problem for us, is a factor? Do you believe that it's laziness internally, and or do you believe that internal hating among us ourselves is the biggest, strongest weapon against ourselves? Is that what's going on? That is what we're going to be speaking on tonight. Now, I would like all of you that are ready to talk to be ready. Let's have a nice, healthy debate. It's a little bit later, but we're going to get moving. And right now, I am going to be going out with Kelly Clarkson and Stronger. And after a word from our sponsors, we'll be back to start this discussion. Don't go away. Keep it locked right here.
You know the bed feels warmer sleeping here alone. You know I dream in color and do the things I want. You think you got the best of me, think you've had the last laugh, bet you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down, think that I'll come running back. Doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Stand a little taller.
Stronger, stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely. New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Let me say thank you to all of you that have been hanging out with us on the later broadcast. We are going to be discussing another issue, pretty much a follow-up from what we've spoken about before, but with a couple of new articles that's come up, I need to readdress it because we are a strong people. We are a resourceful people. We are an empowered people. The problem is that we have certain things that we do to ourselves as well as things on the outside that we can't control on the front. But there are things that we need to do to work around it and make our mark, regardless of what. Now, one of the things that I want to discuss is that an article was just released that the governor of Arizona has officially passed a law eradicating black history from school textbooks. So in this state, all of the new students that are growing up and going into these history classes are not going to know anything about slavery, civil rights, Martin Luther King, anything that makes a big piece of our history important or highlights, Rosa Parks, things to that effect. So how can one person be able to take something that's supposed to be an absolute law or an absolute bill or an absolute set of rules about equality and human rights in what's supposed to be a free country and be able to eradicate the history of an entire race of people? Now, one of the things that disturbed me most about this is that in the face of this being published, okay, we still have what I referred to as my Facebook activists or people that are internally hating each other in our own race, in our own people. And to those of you that are listening that are not African American, this has nothing to do with your personal views or anyone's personal views, because as I say at all times, if the shoes don't fit you, don't put your feet in them. That means if you're not a racist, don't get offended by things that we're speaking about against racism. Now, tonight, everyone, we also have other things that we need to speak on. We need to speak on the fact that they have eradicated a very important section, which was section number 4 of the Voters' Rights Act of 1865, which was there to put some regulations on the states that when slavery was coming to an end or when slavery was in place, these were the most slave-rich, slave-practicing, racist, refused to let slavery die after the abolition of slavery states that were giving blacks a hard time to go to the voting polls and put their voice in for the politicians or the leaders that they wanted. So this has been eradicated, and there's been no uproar from the people that it affects, which is us. There has been another situation where now every time that there's something put in place on the political table that will benefit black people in particular or minorities on a whole, there's a huge opposition from those that can do it and from the outside communities that don't want to see us move forward, empower ourselves, or actually, which I will say loud and proud on the air, come to our own grips and realization of what it is that we are enabled to do. What they have seen of us and have stolen and not allowing us to capitalize on our own talents and our own creations and our own originality. Okay? And what has come from this now is I'm starting to see a whole lot more of internalized fights among ourselves. So it's more like the position where the stronger outside people who want to come in and take over a land allows the people in it to believe that certain things are going wrong among the people so that they can fight amongst themselves and become a weaker conquest, something that will be easier with division and confusion to take over. Instead of coming straight forward and having a one-on-one confrontation, why not just break up the competition and let them fight amongst themselves? That's what's happening. So now, and I see all of you panelists in there, I will be bringing you in just a minute. Here's the situation. We have three main things that I see that either has been actual practices, big common denominators in conversations, or has been things that actually are being blatantly displayed and continued at all times. The three things I've seen that's been the most prominent have been racism, outside racism to our people. I have seen internalized hating among our people, which I will break that down in just a second. And and laziness, that's the other thing that seems to be an issue, perceived or otherwise. Perceived by outsiders about our race and based on actions that majority of what's on the front page tends to display us or project the image of us as. So that's the other thing. Now, my question is racism internal hating among ourselves or laziness an issue that's the biggest weapon in the reason why blacks are stagnated in the progress that we can make and will make if we ever got it together? So internalized hating, let's speak on this because personally that's my first on the list. That's what I think is our strongest weapon against ourselves and our weakest link to ourselves. Black men speaking about how black women choose to wear weaves, be it straight, curly, kinky, it doesn't matter. Making a thing out of it where they're trying to sit around and say either we're confused about our identity or we don't want to be who we are. No, guys, that's not what the deal is. The average person walking around to choose a weave in a store is not for that. Let me explain to you how it works for those of you that have these idolized fantasies about the perfect woman. Okay? And I will get on that one in just a second. We don't go there because we're trying to be white. We're not going there because we're trying to be something other than who we are. We're going there because, damn it, we don't want to sit there and have to worry on our way to work to get up 3 hours earlier so that we can curl our hair and keep it just right all the time. Sometimes we want to try what a short style would look like without actually cutting our hair. Sometimes we want to see what a long style would look like without having to wait weeks till our haircut grows back in. Sometimes we want to know what it's like to be curly without standing under a five-hour hair salon procedure. Sometimes we want to see what it looks like to have blonde streaks without actually putting color in our hair. What will we look like? Is this for a change up of our own personal need to change up a little bit? Not change who we are or our color or skin bleach. And you know what? When we're done with it, we could just take it out and try something new. Now, what's the problem with that is that our own men, who we are looking to please and do whatever, are sitting up there and throwing darts at us, be it publicly in our local neighborhoods or publicly on social media or privately in the homes or among other people, and they're making such a big thing and making us look bad to the outside. Well, and guess what? Those same people that you would have a problem with us going to turn to because we can't count on you anymore are the people that enjoy all the beauty and results that come from it and will snatch us up in a second. And you will be the first people talking about how we switched and jumped ship. Well, guess what? Stand up, take your damn roles, and do the right thing and uplift us the way that we're supposed to be, because we damn sure take the time out to uplift you. Light skin versus dark skin, what the hell is that about? All black to the outside world. We're all a diverse people. We are a cultured people. We are so forgiving and accepting of others. That's part of our bloodline, but yet we can't be accepted fully and wholly and completely by anyone else. Yet we are the first people that allow them to come in with a back door entrance and deliver a Trojan horse. You want to talk about other things? Instead of you downing somebody who doesn't know how to write properly on a letter or whatever the case is, don't snicker at them. If you are better at it than they are, strengthen them in that area. There are plenty of people who are highly intelligent and can't spell. There are plenty of people who are highly intelligent but don't know math. If you are a better mathematician than you are a writer, then accept help from a literary person and give help to somebody who's mathematically challenged. Maybe that's the way we start picking up the reins and keeping it moving and stop dropping the ball so other people can pick it up and blow us up with it. And for that person that answered me today that said they don't see how internalized hating could be a problem, check again, please. Because how on earth can we stand as a unit and fight people on the outside when we're a weak-ass troop in our own damn backyard? That's my question. Next on the line, laziness. Let's face it, fellas and ladies, not all of you, like I said, once again, please let me express this clearly. If the damn shoes don't fit you, don't try to put them on. If you are out there hardworking, if you have goals, if you are inspired by achievements and you want to do something for yourself and you are busting your behind on a daily basis to try to beat the odds and try to beat the blockages and try to beat the stumbling blocks, then by all means, be proud of yourself and help somebody else do it. But for those of you that are sitting around beefing about what the hell you don't have because this man is going to do that and the man ain't going to do this, let me explain this to you. If you don't make a move, you're going to stay in the same spot. Stop complaining about the things we cannot control. We can't control that they shut the government down because they didn't want Obama to give us health care. But we could damn sure make us think about it the next time the political tables come around and they need our damn vote. Stop shaking your damn head and shake your ass and get outside and go do something. That way we can show these people that all those things they're trying to ridicule us with, all those bad images, that's not us. Do us a favor. Have pride in your neighborhood and fight down somebody who's trying to put a strip club next to your baby's school in your neighborhood and can't speak English while they're taking your money to do it. Let's try this. How about instead of you complaining on Facebook for 48 hours straight, you take one of those hours and go talk to your city councilman and let them know that we need more housing. Let them know that we need to stop having people come into the neighborhoods that we've been complaining about needed repairs for years, forced us to live through it. Now that they realize the gold mine we're living in, they want to fix it up and kick you out of it. Stop standing on a 3-hour line waiting to be the first one in line to go buy apparel from an already rich celebrity who's using our struggles to stay rich and not giving back to help the struggle stop. Can we do that for a change, fellas and ladies? Can we stop calling each other B-words and N-words and sagging our pants and telling our kids that this is the way to do stuff? Can we stop trying to let them know that things that are a bad way to go is really a good thing if you paint it up and close your eyes to what it really is? If you stop painting up the red paint over the wormhole in the apple that they shouldn't be trying to take a bite of, maybe that'll work. Stop trying to pretend that there aren't flaws in our own backyard, such as we're not trying as hard as we could. We're too scared to try because we're afraid of failure. So we try to explain and justify why we're not doing anything. And then let's say this. There's nobody standing here with a lynch rope and a whip telling you not to go and support a new black entrepreneur that just hit your neighborhood trying to benefit your community. There's nobody standing there forcing you to not invest in your own future with something that somebody's offering you with a chance to have a return investment, but taking that same money, which probably went to your phone bill. So go stand behind and get the latest Jordans out of the back of somebody's trunk of the car for free or for a discounted price. Tell me, well, whose fault is that? We know that the world is hard on us. We know they're not trying to give us a leg up. We know that they're not trying to give us inside information on how it is we can do something. We got all that. Can we stop complaining about the things we can't do anything about and see a way around it? Can we try that? And before we say, no matter how hard we try, it's never going to work, can we please get the hell up and try to do something? Can we start looking at not Google articles, but articles in your own community by sight and by experience, by what you physically live on a daily basis? Can we stop trying to put the most controversial, ignorant-sounding posts out there so that we can get 400 and 500 replies in cyclic conversations that go nowhere but around and back? To those of you who may ban the show from your list after this is over, I'm sorry about that, but the truth is the truth, and if we don't want to sit around trying to walk with blinders on, we need to clean out everything, even the stuff underneath our carpets. Bringing in our panelists for the first time today. Hang on with me, please. Welcome to the show, call you on the air.
Hello, this is Tariq.
Hi, Al Tariq. Just hang on a minute. We've got a couple of people behind you, okay? You'll be first up. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, everybody. It's Professor Carl Tone Jones.
Hey, Professor. Glad you're here. You'll be second up. Give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Carlos, a.k.a. Stalo Jenkins. This is
Carlos. Hey, Stalo.
Okay,
all right,
hey,
well, guys, it's 1 second, got one more behind you. You'll be third up. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and good evening to the panel. How is everyone?
Good evening, man.
All right. Thank you, Ken. All right, Al Tariq, you've got the mic first.
Okay, this is a hot one. I hear you dropping it hot. The thing is, that's funny how this show came to be what it is and how, you know, spirits and stuff can lead you to certain places, because I was watching some earlier, and I know how our people are, and it was something that we had actually conversed about one time, you know, and all of it plays a part together, forces from the outside as well as from the inside, you know. And I had watched something, and it like brought tears in my eyes. I watched it like 3 or 4 times, and it was about Martin Luther King when he spoke on poverty and racism. He said it was the 3 different things that helped to keep a people down. And he said racism, poverty, and military, you know, and the way he was breaking it down, I was like, oh, my God. And then when I get to see how much of our people are impoverished, and not just black people when it comes to that matter, but since we're talking about black folks, then, you know, as in general, then, you know, it's a whole, it's like 40-something million of us that they say, you know, is in poverty, you know. And I'm like, man, you know, I'm like, where did all this marching and stuff, what did it do? And even him. Everybody want to focus on this I Have a Dream. Like, when Martin did that, the work stopped. Then I posted something the other day. I didn't get a whole bunch of people, like, talking about it, you know, but it was like it was based on these people sitting at a table, and they were all talking about how you can use the black man against one another. They had butlers in there around them, black, and maids and stuff in there, and they were saying how you take the ones who we would call boule, who got a brick and who could help the other ones, they said take them and put them up above the one that's like field hands and stuff. And when you do that, that'll create animosity. So we've been dealing with this war tactic ever since they have had us in an oppressive state. And after so many, you would have to, the process must be broken. It must be, for those who understand. But the masses on the whole are really blind. You know, they won't take the time out to really focus. It's blindness, it's ignorance, it's fear. It's a mixture of all that, lack of trust, lack of love now. You know, you see from the breakdown in the family, you know, all this was really planned out. You know, and it was planned out by wise people. They're great at war. If you look around the world, they're the best at war.
And indeed they are.
All these people fighting it and all that, after a while, some people get tired. Yeah, and they be so scared, and they be like, well, we tried and this and that, and they give up. But like how you said, KD, we cannot give up. So those of us who know, we got to keep pushing it out there. We got to keep trying to live this thing, because even Martin, before he died, he said some things, and I was like, oh, my God, he sounds like like he's mixing up with Malcolm some of the things he's saying now. He was like, we're coming right to cash check. And
yeah,
like 5 years after, he was assassinated. He said, we're coming to Washington to cash our checks. He said, y'all built up land for these other folks that came over here, and yes, you gave them money. You didn't want to give up anything.
Like,
so let's to pick ourselves up by the bootstraps, but you help everybody
right
else. So since we're in a situation where even you can see the deception in the war tactics, with even how we got a black president, but the masses of us still are messed up.
Yes,
so
I can see
that.
Altarik, I do want to touch on something that you said, and then I need to move on to the next panelist for a sec.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, you're absolutely right. We have been living under an oppressed conditioning. I got that. I'm getting that, and I'm trying to explain that none of that is washed over my head. And matter of fact, to the point, I even think that we've been living sort of under a modern day Stockholm syndrome. And for those of you that are going, oh my goodness, in the background, let me explain this to you. The things that we do, okay, while we're not literally tied up anymore and beaten down and locked away from life, the world, and our families, there are certain things that we do that deliberately shoot us in the foot and deliberately upbuild our oppressors. And I'm going to say this. I brought up an example in my opening commentary, and by the way, that was half of a venting session, okay? Why would we sit there deliberately and blatantly see people like, and I'm going to bring this man up again, Jay-Z, okay, who is deliberately telling you it don't matter what's going on, what people are upraged about or enraged about. I'm going to go with Barney's, but now here's how I'm going to clean it up. I'm going to use that money that I get and that prestige that I'm salivating over, and I'm going to try to do good things for you. You had years to do that before this controversy happened. And yet and still, the next day when he drops that line at Barney's, who's going to be the first people standing there like it's a damn concert that is a rare showing and will never be seen for another millennium?
And it's going on right now.
Why would we do that to ourselves? Why would we sit there and deliberately give money we probably have to work 4 weeks to get that much money for? Okay? To go stand in line and give this to somebody who clearly doesn't need it and clearly wasn't thinking about your broke butt when he made the price of these things that he did. And then to tell you, I'm going straight to the people that specifically said you're not welcome to shop here because, frankly, we don't think your kind is capable of shopping with our classy places to go. Why would we sit there and go, here, Massa, take them the money for your Jay-Z line?
Yeah.
Okay, that is like giving back to the same people. That's exactly what it is. There's no way that I'm going to take from my children's rent, school funds, food, and clothes off their back to go get somebody who shut down everybody else's baby's fathers from coming to see their kids because his baby was born in a hospital. Okay, so there's no way I'm going to do that. I believe that we have this instant subconscious connection to the people that bring us down. But on the other token with this, Yes, we've seen what our ancestors went through, and I don't blame our ancestors. From our fathers and mothers right up to our grands and great-grands, they lived it. They walked that struggle. They walked that slavery line. They were there when Martin Luther King was shot. They were there when they were being hosed down. So I can understand that they don't know anything other than they're just happy to have gotten out of that. Well, what the hell is our excuse? We can't keep on trying to get a pass by default. We can't keep on using the excuses that our ancestors legitimately can hold on to by saying, well, the white man's never going to give us a shot. How the hell would you know? The problem is we don't like to struggle for work. We don't like to fight the hard fight
something from it. They want, right now, today's society wants somebody to give them something.
And that
I don't want
true.
Nobody to give me nothing. Nothing. I want to work for mine. Because if you don't work for something, it's not worth a damn thing.
That is absolutely true. And you know what? It's a hard truth. People live with it. There's too many people that are walking around. Let's take about the smallest basic things. Go to a fast food place and watch the difference in customers. Watch what kind of demands you get from a person that's not of our race and see what happens. And once again, people, if this is not you, don't step in the shoes, please. I work a fast food area. I work in the food industry. I service 100, and matter of fact, 60,000 people came to a college hockey game that just took place 3 days ago in Madison Square Garden. 60,000 people, and those people that came in asked for what they wanted, paid for what they needed, asked maybe for an extra box to carry something. The most that I got from the non African Americans was they will fight me to the death when you told them beer was cut off. Now let's go over to our own people. They stood right there and gave five of my cashiers the biggest help because they couldn't get the bigger looking size of nachos, which nachos in itself already, you could just take a handful, it looks like it's filled up. But the one thing we do is because especially stadium prices, we make sure you get packed up. But it was like, I don't like that one. That one just fell on the side of that cardboard. I don't know where that cardboard's been. No. Let me get an extra cheese, please. Oh, $5. It's $5? you got a problem. I don't like your attitude. You just too stank. Let me go on this side. This is what you're getting from your own people.
It's funny, but it's sad.
That's the stereotype that they put out on us. That's what they put on the reality shows that they will allow to pass the production table and make it to mainstream media. That's the people that they mirror us on. Not realizing that could be somebody who's not just an African-American. That could just be the nasty attitude of a nasty person. But because it seemed like we've adopted these kind of things, you know, having the nails that come all the way down to your damn knees from your shoulders, talking about, now, I just got this done. I'm not doing this. This is what they're doing to people that's serving them and not even saying thank you. And after you get cursed out by the other side, you get tipped very well in the process. Meanwhile, these guys will sit right there and fight if you forgot to give them their quarter change. So that's one. Here's the other thing, and then, Professor, you got the mic. The other thing is this. The laziness stereotype is not so much just a stereotype. There are too many people trying to get something extra for nothing. There are too many people that don't try to say, I have a savings account or do whatever. I'm not talking about you single mothers that got abandoned or you single dads that's got, you know, people to deal with because I understand what it's like to have to live check to check. I understand it. Sometimes it feels like you can't get out from under. When you have a child, you have to deal with, and especially when you have more than one. So I'm not speaking on you. But for those of you that take your check and go straight to the Adidas store, straight to the Jay-Z line, straight to the NBA store, to spend every last damn thing you have simply because it's the latest of whatever that came out. Mind you, it's March now, and it'll be all nice and hot. And then come the beginning of April, Jordan 5 is now outdated. Jordan 6.1 just came up for $300 more. If you could sit there and dedicate yourself to making sure you're going to get that every time it comes out, why aren't you taking that portion of that and listening to when a new program comes that'll benefit you and return your investment, that'll re-empower and put money back to where you actually live, not where you dream of being. Professor, your point on this, honey.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you again for having me. And I'm going to probably take a different spin on a lot of things that have been said. I agree with the concepts of us having to deal with working to get out of our situation. I agree with that aspect of it. But I think one overlooked aspect of it all is that since the inception of the institution of slavery and institutional racism, there's been a psychological war on black people. And it has led to a situation that we have to understand that we are a people that are living through trauma. It's living trauma. And we are not truly looking at it from the psychological aspect of the fact that a lot of the symptoms we see in our community can be listed as clinical depression or post-traumatic stress syndrome. And a lot of the things we're talking about can be attributed to the psychological impact. Now, I know it seems as though if we look at these things, we can say, well, slavery happened a long time ago. We should be able to see this with our own eyes and adapt to it. But when you are traumatic or when you're a traumatized people, you don't react to something with the logic of a person that's not going through any trauma. Or not, who hasn't been through any trauma. For instance, it's like having an animal who's been beaten all of his life, and then you rescue that animal, and then you go to pet that animal, and that animal bites you on the hand. Whether you have another animal, and you're raising that animal was raised with love, was raised with all the privileges of being in a loving household, a loving family, and you bring that animal to a household, that animal's playing with the children, that animal's running around, doing tricks, and things of that nature, because it's not dealing with the psychological trauma that was imposed on the other animal. Now, I'm not calling them animals, but I'm just using that as an example. And when you think about it, you think about all the different policies that and laws that were put in place. No other time in the world has a group, has a people been held down systematically like we have. I mean, you talk about how we treat each other. Well, there was the Meritorious Manumission Act of 1710. In which slaves were given privilege for either making their masters rich or snitching on escaped slaves, plans of revolt. And so, you know, now you have internalized tension. You have internalized issues. You had the bedwinch that was created. So now you have that added to the mix. You had the conditions of the plantation in itself. To where, you know, I was watching 12 Years a Slave today, and you're seeing how the brother was hanging from a rope. He was hanging from a noose. And everybody in the plantation were walking around as if nothing else was going on. As if this was an average day. And we have that same helplessness as a people. So when you think about that, you also have to take into context, the fact that we have what's been called the niggerization of our consciousness. Now, Dr. Amos Wilson has pointed this out. I've pointed it out on occasion to where we look at each other through the lens of white supremacy. So we are taught that everything black is negative. Everything black is terrible, gloomy, dark. Every negative connotation that you can aspire to a people. So when we look at ourselves, we see self-hate. So when we look at each other, that hate is manifested and it's taken to a point where we hate each other because we hate ourselves. We hate what we see. Now, I'm going to tell you the power of psychology and why we shouldn't underestimate it. I'm going to give you two examples real quick. One, I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Yeah.
Okay. The Stanford Prison Experiment, where you took a bunch of college students, and they role played, for several weeks at a time. They role played the security guards versus the inmates. And what you found is everybody let, you know, you found the despair, you found the dehumanizing aspects of being a security guard. Once you gave people power over a different segment of people, you found the other people dealing with internalized stress, internalized depression, internalized angst, and it affected their health. But not only that, it affected their psychology. And these experiments were only 2 weeks apart. Now, look at that. Now you look at the Milgram experiment. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the Milgram experiment that took place in Yale. Now, the Milgram experiment was seeing with the gauge how people responded to the direction of authority figures. Now, when you look at that, you see how these people were placed in a room, and they were given given a buzzer that they pressed, and if they pressed the buzzer based on the answer, if somebody got the wrong answer, then you would buzz them, and they would get an electric shock. This was all, you know, they acted it out. The person on the other side of the room wasn't receiving the voltage, or he wasn't hooked up to anything, but they played it out. And even though the people were told that if you continue to turn up the wattage on this machine, that you could deliver a lethal dose of electricity, a lethal shock, they continued to administer the electricity just because the authority figure told them to go ahead and do it. Now, the power of psychology on a society, now imagine that magnetized by hundreds of years and systematically instituted so that whenever you went somewhere, you were told that you were the demon. You were told that you were the hated ones. Wherever you learned something about history, it told you that you were insignificant and you were less than. And then to be emasculated in front of the women. The men were emasculated in front of the women. The women were raped in front of the men. The men were beaten in front of the women all these years. And to think that that wasn't passed on to tradition and tradition and tradition to the point that to this day, we're disempowered in the presence of white people. To this day, you have brothers, strong brothers and sisters in the neighborhood who are scared to look a white man in his eyes today. So you have to understand all these things are relevant. We can't just look at it as simple as black and white. There's a lot of shades of gray that have affected our mindset, that have led to self-hating and the poverty when you add it to it. You put the Boulay groups in there so we have the haves and the have-nots within the black community. You put the resentment in there. You put the negative images in there. You have the drug dealers. You feed the drug dealers with COINTELPRO operations. You sabotage all the black movements with COINTELPRO operations. You put all these different things in order. And how can you not have a society that hates itself and hates each other?
You are absolutely right, Professor, and I'm going to tell you something. I don't disagree with the tragic effects of our history. I am pissed off if, you know, forgive that term, but I'm pissed off that a governor would have the nerve to tell a group of people up and coming that never existed. I saw what it did to my father, who just got backhanded at 4 years old, wouldn't remember that, but his father did. How he wants to fight every single possible memory of truth that it could be today. I've seen all this, and I'm not speaking right now of all of us as one big mass stampede to get out there and just get over this. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about those people who are conscious and angry enough to get the hell on Google and pick up an article and bring it to Facebook to have validation there rather than bring awareness and then get up and go do something. Al-Tariq, you and I spoke about the things that we are actually doing. Okay? And then let me bring this up. Okay? Even if you don't, if you're not the type of person who is, let's say, a confrontational or first step taker, why the hell would you turn around and then undo something someone else is trying to do that is possibly doing for
exactly.
you? That's my question. Why, if you don't have to be a person that'll go up there and fire off a big old scream match at somebody. You may not be a person that likes to confront people and have public speeches. There's somebody out there who cares enough about you on a whole to do it for you. Shut the hell up and just let them do it. That's my thing. Be quiet about it. What if I always used to tell my ex-husband, okay, you don't like to stand up and discipline the kids about picking something up, then don't undo what I'm doing. And vice versa. If I don't have the guts to pick up a spanking or do whatever to my children, and he is, then I can't be the one to undo something that should be done, but I didn't have the guts to do it.
Well, I can explain that in one sentence. We as a people do not understand the game of racial politics. We as a people do not understand that. We don't understand the power of solidarity and sticking together, because every time we've stuck together, every time there's been solidarity amongst us, we have faced tremendous, tremendous white backlash. Tremendous.
Right.
I mean, you look at all the communities that we had thriving communities that stuck together. We had people, different groups, but then when you have entire government, the most powerful government in the world, design itself upon destroying your community, and they send people into your community to infiltrate your community, agents into your community to infiltrate something that has never truly been done on this type of scale ever in history. You know, we have to understand we are dealing with a demon that is far more powerful than we give it credit for. And the fact that we continue I'll give you 1 second. I'm sorry. But the fact that we continue to underestimate the power is the reason why we continuously find ourselves back at the starting line.
Professor, I don't think that we are underestimating the power of that, because everybody is angry enough about it to make Facebook chats for 4 to 5 straight days in a row. Everybody's out there. Notice one of the things that I think sort of gets me. It starts off with everybody understanding the importance of the issue, what the issue is, where it's coming from, what the history is, whatever. By the time that it gets to the nearing the end of it, it winds up becoming an internal bashing session. Somebody got called the bitch. Somebody got called the nigger. Somebody got called the lowlife. Somebody got called the this. That's what it goes to. Exactly what all of our Stockholm oppressors are doing. This is my thing. If you have enough intelligence, enough passion, enough anger, enough understanding to post it as a problem for awareness to your people, if you have enough knowledge to understand the power of unifying when there's a black candidate in office to be voted in, why can't you take, let me add this. You have enough power, enough strength, enough courage, enough anger to protect your material possessions in the same time, especially, and understand, tell me how often you heard this. I waited a whole 3 weeks to go stand in line and get that. I finally got them. You better not put a nick on those things. If we have that exact mentality to get up and do that in a time like that, then why isn't it applied to a daily basis? We can't keep on saying that it's because the man did this. Listen, I'll give that to my grandfather. I'll give that to my great-grandfather. I'll even give it to my father. I'll even give it to us to a point, because we were raised by those three. But we are the people that got to pick up the ball and do something different. We have more opportunities than our parents ever had. We are smarter, we are more closer in age to our children to understand a little bit more about what they think and what they're going through. We're kind of just coming out of our teen rebellion stage ourselves. The point is, and for those of us that are in this little circle right here, it's our damn responsibility to reach the others on the level they understand it. If we can't explain it to them on a political level or overall down the line level, then, like I said before on a previous segment, then damn it, let us explain how these issues will affect them from buying Jordans from behind the trunk of a car. If that's the way it takes to get the overall message out, then do it. That's what I feel. We cannot keep on taking our precious time, our precious energy, while our kids are being sucked up into this garbage. We are busy internalizing the problem and letting the outsiders come in on a surprise attack. Meanwhile, this is one of the things that upset me about 3 days ago. 72 hours of one stupid post that went around and around and winds up leaving the topic that it was to become a in the hood, with a bottle in my hand, fighting about whatever, of the yes to hear on the corner conversation, Okay? Now, understand this. Meanwhile, while that was going on, I don't know if it was you or Stalo that had posted the government of Arizona banning Black history.
That would be me.
Not one person posted about that. Meanwhile, no, I know it sounds cute and funny and sad and funny, but guess what? While they're busy talking about, well, your weave is this way and you wearing that because
that's
you want to be
control.
White. And my sister, you need to be a queen and not a sellout. Guess what? After you done said all four of those posts, the government done cut four of your programs.
Well, Katie, I'm sorry. Somebody else is about to jump in.
Laughing, but I'm saying we can't. When do we come up to the point of getting the most basic of understanding to how important this is, and how many times do we have to keep hearing people say that they're tired of it and not doing a damn thing about it?
Well, you
there's
you
nothing we could do about what I'm sorry. There's nothing we could do about that, about the opposition trying to shut down the government. But we could damn sure take away from giving them what it is that makes them go round, and that's money. They're not stupid.
Well,
they know what our purchasing power is. Otherwise, they wouldn't be dumbing down all their fancy luxurious products to make it affordable to the poorer race or the poorer market or the middle class or the low income, such as cell phones, as I brought up before. All right? iPhones have prepaid service now.
Everybody that professes that they're conscious, Katie, is not truly conscious. Just because you know one or two things.
But to a point they are.
What?
But to a point they are. If they could get that far,
we could tell
by the posts as they go who really is just there for the ride. But I'm saying, for those of them that start out posting that stuff, they have enough understanding, anger, want to change about it or whatever, to post it. We, as the people who are doing the moving, need to get the hell out there and make them understand why the energy for 72 hours on an already millionaire young white boy's Facebook station is not helping the situation they're complaining about. And I'm sorry to continue.
You got to meet people. First of all, we got to recognize where people are. Everybody is somewhere different in this struggle, and not everybody is where we are. So we have to understand that aspect of it, and some people will never get there because people rarely leave. It's a scary thing to leave your comfort zone to stand out there and to truly be standing against the system and to truly be standing for your people, because we're going to have that struggle internally. Just like you said, the Stockholm Syndrome is taking place. It is taking place in our community stronger than ever, where people are holding on to this thing called the American Dream. And the American Dream means beating us and cutthroat situations toward each other in order to get up there where some, you know, supposedly up there, up the corporate ladder, up to the, you know, to live with the dominant society, to drink milk from their cups, to sit at their tables. That is where some of us still dream. And like I said, we have the niggerization of our mind, of our consciousness, where we still, even though there are some of us that are so-called conscious, we still look at each other through the lens of white supremacy. So we still look at it as this, and I'm going to use myself as an example. I'm not saying I feel like this because I don't, but I'm just using just per se, devil's advocate, that saying I'm sitting here listening to everybody talk tonight. I'm saying to myself, these niggas don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to sit here and tell them what it is. And if they don't like it, tough on them because I got all the answers. That's the way so many of us deal with situations internally amongst ourselves. And like I said, we don't understand the whole game of racial politics and how it's to be played or displayed. We don't truly understand how it's even played within our own community. We have so many people that are so new with this whole game of expression, so new that they're carrying scars from other situations. They're carrying their personal vendettas against women. Well, I've been turned down by so many women. This is my platform to get it all out of my system. And, you know, so a lot of this stuff is personal, is catty, is bullshit, for real. But, you know, a lot of people are just trying to get off. And they're using black consciousness to get off because, okay, I have a little bit of information in this area, so I'm going to use that, and I'm going to trash all the sisters that look like the sisters that didn't talk to me in the past. Okay, so now we have all that going on, all this gibberish, all that jargon going on. Meanwhile, It's another diversion from the fact of the matter is that there's ulterior motives being played out in those circles, in those situations. And those same types of ulterior motives is the same type of division that's been destroying us for years on end and has ran its ugly head, even in the Black Conscious Movement. I was just talking to a brother right before I got on the air. And, you know, he knows a lot of people in the Black Conscious Movement because he's one of those guys that's behind the scenes internationally. So we were just having a conversation about the fact that even higher up, so-called higher up, the more well-known people, that's what I'll say, people who are more well-known in the circular terms of Black consciousness aren't truly in it for Black consciousness. They're in it for profiting. You know, they're in it to make their margins go bigger. So we have to truly recognize that the true foot soldiers are the people that are working behind the scenes. They're not even on Facebook because they don't have time for Facebook. They're not on social media. The only time they're on social media is to spread information and pass it along, not to have a debate. See, that's a coward's way out. The debate on Facebook is a coward's way out. The debate on Twitter is a coward's way out. The debate on social media is the coward's way out. The shaking my head syndrome is the coward's way out.
The shaking my head syndrome.
Exactly.
I got to go to the other panelists, and I have two new ones trying to get in. Give me 1 second, okay, and let me bring them in. And then, Stalo, you have the mic. Hold on. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, this is Michael Greer.
This is who?
Michael from Queens, New York. Calling out of Queens, New York. How you doing?
All right, hold on 1 second, sir. You'll be
all right, hey, Michael.
Okay. Hey,
welcome to the show. And welcome to the show, caller. You on the air?
Yes, this is Reese from Georgia.
Hi, Reese. Okay, 1 second.
All right.
You guys will get a turn very soon, okay? Say hello, you're up.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
Hey, what's going on, brother?
Directing back to the topic, and you know, this is my take on it. My take is this. I mean, look, given everything that was just said, you know, racism it's morphological and it has several faces, and you know, this is going. And the political, like the professor said, political structures and dynamics of racism are so complex and dynamic that once you start scratching the surface, you know, you continue to scratch and you just find out that there's so much more to be seen. It's you know, like the argument that blacks can be racist against whites. But that's a mute point because the real thing is, can blacks be racist against other blacks? And yes, they can, and that's what's going on. You know, now, when we think about it, and we even I haven't seen as much of it, but, you know, I can imagine. Who spoke up for the little girls and the little boys in school who were ruthlessly teased every day? In the schools with our children, the behavior that's reflected in schools and the behavior that's reflected amongst our children is really directly reflecting the media portrayal of us and the common racial meanness and the nappy and the African and the dirty and the niggas and the bitches and the hoes and all those names. See, when you think about it, how many times are your children really hearing this stuff? It really is not even as much as on TV as it is when they're at school. You see, when they're
in school, in their music, on television.
So, absolutely. And so, because they hear all this at school, you know, not at home, not elsewhere. This is the adult manifestation, right? You know, we need to have some type of pro-black tribalism, but we need to install it early. See, it's a lot of us, you know, that understand that some things should have existed when we were children, and we're obsessed by it, you see. And instead, our children are left to fend for themselves in an educational institution that is governed by our enemies. The whole while, the perception, all these messages are doctored up to cripple you, cripple our kids, cripple me, you know. And these self-haters, these are the people that during the childhood, they already And they have childhood issues of hurt, pain, self-confidence, racism, brutality from people that look like themselves, most probably. You see, because racism, white racism, also manifests through black mouths, through black actions, hands, you know, and through black people as well. And so that brutality, they have unresolved issues, and then you see it in the language that they use. And I'm thinking back to a lot of stuff I read today. I haven't even been on Facebook lately because I've been a little busy. But stuff I read today, I heard people talking with so much like hate in their heart and just wanted to try to say something to hurt somebody. And it was so crazy because I was like, these people are psychos. They're actually on the internet trying to hurt each other with words.
There's no education in it. I had an incident today where I posted out the broadcast question, and there was a particular responder that, you know, it, first of all, the viewpoint that he brought up was, like, way out there, but history with this particular person throughout the group has shown that a lot of times he just throws out something that's controversial to get, like, that knee-jerk reaction from people. So today, he tried to bait me into it, and I definitely declined the situation because the question that he used to bait me was as obvious as, it's a live wire, will it burn me? You know what I mean? So I sidestepped the situation and kept the conversation back on track. So that's the type of silliness that happens that wastes time and effort and action. I do want to move on to the Deacon because we do have two new panelists, which I want to welcome Reese and Michael to the show, and, you know, I want to give them an opportunity to speak their mind. So Deacon, take the mic.
Okay. First of all, gentlemen, everybody that's on this panel this evening, I would like to commend you because for the simple fact you are here and you're putting your opinions out over the air and they all have positive points. But my thing is, okay, I understand our black history and the oppression and everything that we have been through. Our ancestors before us, the things that they had to go through, even the times up to Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. For a while, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X could not see eye to eye for a good while. But then they got to a point to where they started to see that they were after the same thing when it came to our people. They wanted to empower our people. They were both going for the same thing, but they were going at different angles. You know, my thing is, okay, even through all our history, the things that our people have been through, okay, we have a solid foundation that has been laid out for us, the generation today. There's no excuse why we cannot be doing better than what we are. We can't start putting blame on government. We can't start putting blame on the white man because, for the simple fact, I'm always on the thing of that we are, and people might take it the wrong way, but right now the way I'm feeling, I get so passionate about this. We are the original people. We are bloodline from royalty. You know, there's a lot of things that people don't realize that we contribute to this whole United States that people that lose sight of because they're off into their own thing. They're about a self thing, and it shouldn't be like that. We're so stuck in this crabs in the bucket mentality that we need to get away from. You know, and like I said, I need to commend you, brothers, because I know that it's not just us out there that are thinking like this. And we need to get together and put together something for all of us to come together and start something on our own. We can't depend on the government, you know, which is outrightly ran by the white man. You know, this might sound racist, but I don't think it's racist because, for the simple fact, as a black man, I don't feel like I could be a racist when it comes to a point like that. There's no way. There's no way. And for the simple fact, I feel like God has poured into me every day of my life for me, from where I came from, for me to be better than what I used to be. You know, there's certain things that I used to do that I look at now, it's like, damn, how could I ever have done that?
You know, there comes a time in your life to where, as you get older, you're supposed to get wiser. If not, you're going to go out the world asshole backwards.
Right.
And that's a simple fact. You know, and the way things are today, it seems like we're going backwards from what our ancestors have left for us to build on. Instead of us building on it, we're having this foundation they have laid for us, laying at our feet, and we're just trampling it back down into the ground.
Huh.
And it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. And I feel like we, the group that is gathered together here this evening, and every day through the week that we make appearances on this broadcast, we are doing something. We are making a difference. And that's what everybody else needs to chime in on. And the ones that want to stay out there, it's just like with Moses. If you didn't want, Moses will tell you, well, if you don't want to follow me, you stay over there on that side.
Mm-hmm.
You stay over there on that side. That's the side you choose? Okay. Everybody else, we're going to get to the promised land. Martin Luther King said, hey, I might not get there with you, but we will get to the promised land. And it's just that we have to pick up some of the things that have been left for us in the past and use them today.
That's right.
That's the only way it's going to work. We have to start waking up for ourselves. We can't depend on nobody else. We have to depend on ourselves, our own brothers and our sisters. We have to depend on that. If we don't start doing that, we're not going to get anywhere. We're just spinning our wheels in the mud.
Thank you very much.
Like, to me, I mean, the country kind of stalled our movement, you know what I mean? Like, the movement of the 1950s and 60s for us to get civil rights, the government started to give us stuff, and then we got satisfied, and we're like, okay, we good now, you know? So the movement just died off once the white man kind of threw us a few more scraps off the table. It's like, okay, y'all can vote. We made a few of y'all rich, so y'all think that it's possible to do. So, okay, just chill out now.
Yeah, you know what? But
it's
time for us sitting down and waiting for them to knock the scraps off the table to us. Let's get up on the table and take the stuff off the table. We don't have to settle for scraps. Those days are long gone.
Absolutely, because I believe that what you just described to me just now, this lackadaisical this seeping out of our passion for freedom, is not true. It's not true. That's just a perception that a lot of us in our age group have, and we're passing it down to the kids, and the kids are manifesting it. It's not
right.
True. That's not how this movement was slowed down. It was slowed down by actual forceful action, actual legislation, actual FBI COINTELPRO. You just talked about 50s and 60s, then you forgot what happened in the 70s. You see that what just happened? You thought we forgot. No, Black Panthers were still fighting, still clinics, still doing what they had to do in the streets. Now, at the end of the day, people that don't want to really perceive the reality, see, the reality is in the streets, everybody that's listening.
Mm-hmm.
So since the reality is out here and out there, you need to stop. We all need to slow down and stop taking in the imagery and making that our internal manifestation. Because what we see more than likely in the media portrayals and what we've learned over time in life. Mm-hmm. No, we didn't get lackadaisical over time. You're lackadaisical over time for thinking that.
I need to not you specifically.
But overall, you know what I'm saying?
I just want to interrupt and ask which one of you is speaking. Hello?
Hello? Yes, this is Reese.
Hold on. Which one of you is speaking? Is that you, Michael, or you, Reese?
Oh, that was Stalo.
No,
sorry.
Michael right here.
Oh, that was you, Stalo?
Yes.
Okay, all right. You got it back off. Michael, you're up. I'm sorry,
honey. What are you trying to say, all us brothers sound alike?
No, not at all. All right. Welcome to new panelist, Michael. Michael, you're up next.
Hi, how you doing? I'm calling out of Queens, New York.
Well, my hometown.
Yeah, I think I called your show before. I don't know if you remember me.
Your voice very much sounds familiar. It was quite a while back, though.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
This is a very, very touchy subject, you know what I'm saying? I'm actually 29 years old. I'm probably the youngest one on your panel.
Yeah, you kind of sound young.
Maybe.
I'm going to have to play devil's advocate for a bit because
we speak as if. We don't bite. I just bark.
We speak as if black people at one time weren't together, as if we've had these problems all along. And that's
One second. No, we're not. No, we're not. That's what we're fighting about, because our ancestors did fight through all of the crap that they were given to keep values in the house, to keep the family structure together, to honor marriage, to honor this. I don't know how many of our statements.
Listen to what you're saying, though. Uh-huh. You're exactly right. But what happened? What really happened, though? Was it our fault, or was it the government who did that?
Let me touch on that right now, okay? Our ancestors got up every day, tied up, beat up, cut up, right? Was told that their babies weren't a damn thing in the eyes of the people that were taking them, and they stood up every day and refused to give up trying to have a life for themselves, trying to get out of where they were, to protect their family, to fight for a future. They did. What happened is anybody should have given up and went through, I don't want to try anymore, I don't give a damn, I don't care. It should have been them. We don't have an excuse. I don't think we have an excuse.
Right.
I think we have it hard, but we don't have it half as hard as they did. What we have today is modern-day corporate watered-down versions of slavery, but we still have the freedom to walk around and fight. Yes, we're going to get some boots up our ass.
Freedom in this country as your government will allow you to. Your government
and you
can
know
shut
what?
Down your radio
let
station
me,
right now for saying the wrong
I didn't interrupt anybody.
I was very polite.
Okay,
I'm trying to bring a different perspective as far as what the young people see today and what the ancestors were seeing before. You got to understand something about the younger age. The younger age equates success with money. Mm. How could they not? They live in America where they're told that money is everything. So you can't really get at these young people too much because they're only doing what this society is showing. You got to understand it. So they're just
not just their society, but their parents also.
Their parents are their parents are just as much of a victim as anybody else, because in this society, like I said, it's all ran by money. So your parents is going to work just to keep food on the table, just to keep clothes on your back, and they ain't making damn near much as they should be making for these jobs.
Michael, but that goes back to
what
we're speaking about. The fact is, for a parent to get out there and work to keep food on the table instead of going to rob somebody was their parents' effort to show some value. Now, understand,
right.
I want to clear something up real quick with you. The one thing I do not do is blame the youth today for what the youth are. That is not on the youth. That is on us. And we had the best of both worlds, not from the government. So let me clear that up. We had the best of both worlds because we came from first the generation that actually got really like the first benefit of not actually being a slave that can walk out their door and get whacked in the face physically and it's okay with the rest of the people standing around. Not saying that there's not police brutality, because that we know that racism
right.
and all that other stuff exists, but now it's toned down or it's covered up in a way that looks like it could be explained. I'm talking about the willful choices that we make to do nothing for ourselves. I'm talking about the willful choices that we make that kicks all the hell that our ancestors went through to give us this opportunity to the wind. I'm talking about those that do not.
I don't think that those brothers and sisters take those choices willfully. I think that they're brainwashed.
So
I think they're brainwashed
cool?
because the government, like I said, the government realizes the power that black people have when they come together. That's why they destroyed all the good organizations that were out there, like the Panthers, like the Vice Lords, like the US organization. They destroyed every black organization that was a threat to their society. They started
okay.
out.
Okay.
Exactly.
Good.
So to bring that back to a great, powerful point that Katie had made earlier, there are those of us who would undo something that some of us would build in the righteous cause.
Yes.
What about that?
Yes.
And
yes.
That's the point in hand, really. See, and even to dance around that is to not even address it.
Mm-hmm. But one second.
If the devil was to advocate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do want to ask a question to Michael. Michael, you're absolutely right about a lot of stuff that you said, but now let's look at the stuff that has nothing to do with somebody standing behind you with a gun to your head, like I just brought up earlier. They're up there. Why are we sitting up there deliberately walking up to a person that's within us and not enhancing the beauty, but telling a woman why the choices that she's making to feel good about herself is stupid and dumb and degrading and a sellout to the race? Why is it that we are not? Oh, you said that the government's making it hard. All right, I can say that about now, because especially since we got a black president, or they're really trying to shut things down, because no black man was ever supposed to make it to that level. But now let's take a look at this. What happened back in the 80s and the 90s when financial aid was quite available and for schooling, and they chose not.
You're trying to say that President Obama is for black people?
Listen, I just went to college. I just went to college for the first time in my life, and I'm in my 40s. For the first time in my life, I went to college back in 2008. And understand, that was when financial aid was starting to get cut. But I still had the opportunity to get it right in the last bulking block. It's not, listen, everything is not to blame on the government. We know what can't be done. We know what they put up there in front of us. Let me ask you a question. How many of us, our people, being truthful, have found ways around legal means to get something that we weren't supposed to have? Think real hard. Think about all the cable service that we've gotten. Think about all of the phone bills that we've gotten. Think about all the resourcefulness that we had to accomplish that mission. Tell me, why is it we can't get up there and say, you know what, I'm good at barbering. I'm going to go get financial aid to go into school to get my
get life.
And, again, I say that to being a fit, you act as if black people aren't doing these things. They are being done. In fact, the matter is that the media does not put those things forward. Every time you look at World Star Hip Hop, they showing us cooning and doing
and
something jacked up.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
And the thing is,
instead of graduating,
and they don't get nothing shown about them. No one says a damn thing about them, because the government don't want you to see that. The government wants you to see that you're a lonely down, low-ass nigga, and you will never be the standards of a white person in America. Straight up.
But guess what? You know why?
Because you accept his value system.
I'm speaking metaphorically, so excuse me. I apologize.
No, we got that, Michael. We got that, Michael. Let me ask you a question with regards to World Star Hip Hop, okay? World Star Hip Hop, first of all, is designed to get likes and to get money. And guess what? What are they going to do it with? They're going to do it with exactly what sells, and that's controversy among our own. But guess who's the people giving them the power to do it? It's not white people looking for it. It's us. We're the ones that repost our garbage.
The white folks own it.
It's us, but you know what? We have the choice to say we don't want to see that crap on our pages.
And you know what?
When
the brothers like me speak out against shows like Scandal and all this stuff, all these little Bedouin shows, we get called haters. We get looked down on.
You're just hating, and all that stuff
like that. You know what I'm saying? Eventually, brothers are going to get tired of talking. They're going to get tired of trying to stand up for what's right.
You know what that is? That's the saying of what the people in today's society is. Oh, it is what it is. I don't accept that. Well, that's what they stuck on today. It is what it is. So what are we gonna do about it? No.
Well, can I just...
No, that's not the attitude to have.
So what I'm saying to you, brother, is if you think you're going to change anything in this society, you better be prepared to get guns and take down the army.
I'll tell you one thing. You ain't changing nothing in the United States to benefit black people.
This country was never built for us, and it will never be for us.
You
want
to know why you went to guns so quick? You want to know why you went to guns so quick, but not why you went to guns so quick, but why the pathway, the mental pathway going towards where you're going went to guns so quick? Because in this society, everyone wants to get over. And when it comes to getting over, the most ultimate way of getting over is to pull a caper, is to pull the gun and to do something and take something. In fact, this society completely values free labor. Free labor is like, oh my God, if you got some free labor, what?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was built on slavery first. So now let's talk about why the media only shows you what you want to see, because
right.
of the value system. Okay, they're showing you what the country values: free labor.
Yeah.
So called laziness. You want to see some love in hip hop? All you're going to see is a whole bunch of free labor. Laboriously,
yeah.
emotionally draining themselves upon you and your visual. You understand?
Hey, Stalo, I need to address something you said because I have to bring our new panelist who's been waiting patiently in the corner. Thank you, Reese. Give me just a minute. They can't get success on something that's not received to be successful. So if we turned around and said we are tired of seeing the worst of us be projected as the image of us and made us some stink about it, we would do it. If we would stop going on Maury Povich and exposing paternity secrets about our babies and thinking it's fun to be on there, because the longer you are with the very many missing partners that you have, then maybe people would take us seriously. Professor posed the question before, why should anybody give a damn about us if we're not giving a damn about us? Which brings
Thank
me back
you.
To the reason about why I think internal hating is our first most self-mass destructive weapon. Internal hating, because if they could break up the troops, then there's really no need to have a war with us face-to-face like real men and women. Nobody's going to face us as humans
Correct.
And let us debate. They're just going to take us over because we done picked ourselves apart.
Right. As a matter of fact, If the devil is within, right, then internal hating is in fact the devil's advocate. In fact, that is the devil's advocate, internal hating. If the devil is within, supposedly, right? I mean, just metaphysically speaking, right? Devil advocate, meaning there is no other side. That's where they confuse us all the time with this debate crap. This is what they did with the Martin, Malcolm, everybody. The thing is, yeah, they had different views on questions that they didn't write. They didn't write them questions. Those questions that they were debating on were already manifested for them to fight over. All right?
Exactly.
They could have came together, and they saw that, and they did so. So let's get the reality straight as well. Okay, it all happened already. Okay, we're not living in the time of in this era of time where we just realized they did start getting together. No, we already had this information. It's in archived books, so people already been reading it. Scholars, many of them, thousands of them. So it's not as if it's old news. And if you feel like it's old news, then it's something from within. Okay,
if you feel like you're going through stages,
it's something from within.
Yes, I got to move on to Reese. Reese, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for waiting through this debate. You have the mic now.
What's up? I'm Reese from Georgia. I'm 28, so I'm the youngest on the panel.
Welcome, young. Go ahead.
To me, there's a thing called self-preservation, and every human being has it, but black people to, I think, the nth degree. You know, there's the black community, and then there's the black individual.
Right.
Now, the black individual wants to see the black community progress. But if that progression means that they have to lose all their things that they've worked for in the white man's system, then they're not for that.
I got you.
Because
now, that, you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah, so their self-preservation mode, whether it's their money, whether it's their prestige, whether it's their status at their job, whether it's their life, they don't want to lose anything in order to get that progress for the community.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like the white man couldn't have enslaved us if, say, the first group of black slaves they brought over was so rowdy, so unmanageable, that they had to kill us all. If they had to do that, they wouldn't go and get any more of us.
Absolutely. It would be a waste.
But, yeah, but it's our wanting to just stay alive and just make it and just survive. Mm-hmm. I want to survive so I can see my kids and help them survive so they can just help their kids survive. And you're being used as cattle because you allow yourself to be used as cattle. Because you're
that's
scared.
Got a question.
And
that's a great point.
I have a question for you, though. I have a question for you on that one, right? We are the type that will be self-preserving. Now, let me ask you a question. If we're not going to do it at the risk of losing what we've built, but what the government is doing, we're going to lose it anyway. Don't you try to fight for it? Don't you get to the point of saying that I get this, but there's got to be something I could do? Has anybody ever been in a position, and I'm sure all of you in the human race have, that you have been to the point where you've been warned that something is going to happen, but you did nothing, or you couldn't do anything at the time that it came to you, such as they're going to come take your house. And they gave you till, let's say, February 17th, but you don't get paid till February 24th, right? What's the first thing you're going to do, even though you've had months? You're going to call every person you could think of to try to first get an extension. Am I right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next thing you're going to do is if you get that no, you're going to ask for a supervisor, you're going to ask for somebody else, or you're going to look up every bit of Google information that protects your rights to keep your home, okay? That's what we need to do on a daily basis, because I have spoken before about the not in my backyard disease. I have spoken before about the let me just cover my circle space. Understand, we don't live in a world where it's just about one spot on the earth. You have to leave your home to go to work. You have to take the train back to get to your home. You got to leave your house to go food shopping. You've got to leave your house. Any place where you go outside of your yard, you are affected by what someone else may do. When you leave your driveway, you got to go into the road. You have to worry about somebody driving recklessly, even if you're driving carefully.
Well, Katie.
Yeah.
Katie, you have.
Who's addressing me right now?
This is Professor Paul
Okay,
Stone.
Go ahead.
You have, you brought up some good points. But, you know, there's one thing we're not talking about, and it's the shiny things. The shiny things that are thrown as trinkets in front of the have-nots to sell out. You know, we've deprived you of so much, and I'm speaking as the dominant society. We deprived you of so much that we're going to throw you a few trinkets, and these few trinkets, while they're just drops in the bucket from us, you know, to you, it's, you know, you hit a gold rush. And that's the things that's how we have to deal with the youth today, though. We have to offer them an alternative to the trinkets. We have to offer them an alternative to the shiny things, because the youth is who's going to be able to move us forward. We have to be the teachers, but the youth is the army. And they're the ones who we have to teach these messages to be on the receiving end of these messages of working together. We have to teach them the history that there were hundreds of Tulsas, hundreds of Rosewoods, hundreds of Durham, North Carolinas,
yes.
And Raleigh, North Carolina, hundreds of black communities that did their thing, that were working together. And we have to show them that this has happened in our history, our recent history, and that we can work towards building these communities up. We can move towards eliminating self-hatred. We have to do that. We have to do those things now, because
The government is always, it's not just the government, it's the powers that control the government, the shadow government that are controlling and manipulating systems to maintain white supremacy. So they have to continue to put diversions in front of us and to put diversions in the media. They have to suck all of our children in. They have to take the history out. As the governor of Arizona said, if these children learn about their true history, they're going to grow up resentful. They're going to want to, step away from this whole African-American concept, and they're going to want to be black.
Right.
So
wow.
They're going to want to,
let me ask you a
powerful statement.
Can I ask him a question?
Who's addressing?
So based on what you just said, I think it was the professor that was talking. Based on what you
speaking
said,
now. Who is speaking now?
This is Mike.
Mike.
So based on what you were just saying, okay, you hit a lot of points. You're talking about how the government's crooked and all that. So basically, the answer to getting our salvation back is the fight, you said, right?
Well, it's a different method of fighting. See, I heard what you said about, and I understand what you meant about, grabbing the guns and going to war. I understand it. See, what I'm talking about, and I talk about it in my lectures. I have several lectures that are out right now. But, I talk about the fact that we have to do it through economics. We have to do it through teaching.
Yeah.
We have to do it through, our revolution has to be one where we start to teach our youth how to be entrepreneurs, because see how we talk about money. See, the money is a great delusion. It's a delusion, and it's a delusion we're sold. See, when you have wealth, you don't need money. But when you don't have wealth, you need money. You need money to get wealth, but when you have wealth, you don't need the money. But the money is used as a tool to control people. So now we have people who are talking about, I'm chasing dollars, I'm not sleep. If you're broken, you sleep. Or if you're broke, you have no reason to be sleep. The stuff, different monikers like that. And then we feed it to our children. And then our children feel like they got to sell themselves short just to get another dollar. That they have to sell themselves out. And the whole process that's taking place is we are losing our economies because we're chasing the dollars. They're coming back into our communities and taking all the land. They're gentrifying our communities. So we have to teach them the value of real wealth, not money, real wealth. And once teach them the value of real wealth and entrepreneurship, where they are in charge of how they get their money, where they don't have any masters to answer to, once we teach them how to do those things, then we can watch that snowball roll down the hill until it turns into an avalanche that crushes this system. But we have to start with the snowball at the top of the hill.
When all is said and done, and when you do that, they're going to come after you. And that's what I'm saying is you're going to have to get the gun.
Michael, understand, they're not going to come after you. They may not come after you the way we traditionally hear it in history, because it's a different age now. They're going to come after you in other ways. Find a way to find something illegal that you did that you really didn't do and put you in jail. They're going to come after you and try to take something that makes you empowered, such as your money. They're going to find a way to do that because they have to do everything corporal and white collar now. Except for those rogue cops that are just killing the unarmed black men for the hell of it. Now, that's a little different. But I wanted to touch on something, Professor, you said, and you said, Michael. Michael, let me start with you. When you said, in essence, the professor's saying that we need to fight. Yes, we do. But the idea of a fight in something like this is for us to have a fight where we don't kill ourselves in the process. The idea is to fight so that we could achieve what we're trying to get. So one of the things that we're going to do is it would be pretty stupid for you to walk in and just have a fist fight, proverbially or otherwise, and wind up dying from it. What did you achieve? Nothing but blood, and nothing got done. On the other hand, Professor, what you said is that we got to teach our children all of these things. Absolutely. But one of the segments that we had about 3 days ago where we referred to how if you have too many things in front of you, you can't value one thing. So if we're trying to race out there and tell a community to resolve all of the big ball of problems
at one time and do this overnight or come at them that way. That's never going to happen. It doesn't even happen in things that are not a racism problem. It doesn't even happen in daily chores. If you have your house to clean and there's five rooms, that's a mess. You can't clean all five rooms at once. So what you
no,
do
No, you can't.
Need to,
can I ask
do,
another question?
In a minute.
Hold on. Let me get in. Ms. Reese.
If you can teach them to go find the one thing that's the most important thing for them in the immediate thinking, okay, and have them preserve that, and that gets done, I think that we can take the next step. Change doesn't happen by sitting on your ass. Change steps don't happen by not taking the first step. Now you can ask me the question, Michael.
Why was Muammar Gaddafi killed by the United States?
Oh, centralized banking.
Anybody know the answer to that?
The Golden R, centralized banking.
African Union? No, what?
Yeah.
Right, he was trying to set up African currency.
United States of Africa.
He was trying, well, more importantly, he was trying to set up currency.
He was the leader of. It wasn't
their
just
own
him.
Currency. Right. Mm-hmm. So basically, Muammar Gaddafi was trying to do exactly what, to some degree, what the professor was talking about, having
but
your own resources, having your own
one at a time, please.
Yes, we can all sing together, but we can't talk together.
Right. I was just trying to bring a point is that everything that is counter new United States of America is always destroyed, period, whether it be domestic or abroad. So, like I said, if you're going to do what you're trying to do, be prepared for war. You better be armed.
Oh, trust me. I am
ready.
It's already
been war. I mean, to me, the only way we actually get a seat at the table is to have a vibrant black economy. You know, but there's a few obstacles to that. For one, we now have to erect our black economy in the white man's system, which he's going to throw up all kind of roadblocks. The second thing is black people hate working for other black people. It's that slave mentality that nobody wants to see anybody do better than them. Like me right now, I'm an actuary for a business analytics consulting firm, and it's an Indian-based firm. An Indian guy started it in Chicago, and then he moved his main offices to India. Okay, the company is at least 95% Indian. You know what I'm saying? And I'm only one of three black people in the whole company out of 2,000-something employees.
Wow.
Good for you.
You know what I'm saying? So, and I sit and I think to myself, why can't black people do this?
Yeah.
And I come to the conclusion that we aren't skillful enough. In order to get a seat at the table, we have to have something that the other people want.
That's why I brought up the children. That's exactly the reason.
Reason, well, I want to touch on what you just said, because it's going to bring up something that I mentioned a little bit earlier. You're absolutely right. We have an arrogance problem between ourselves. We don't want to work for each other. As a black entrepreneur walking up to a black consumer and asking them to pay attention to a product or service is met immediately with skepticism that if you're not a brand name, if you're not a label, I get it. But guess what? You just said we need to have something that they want or whatever the case is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's our job as a person who got there, who opened that door, to show the next person how they can do that also, how it is possible, how it's not a fluke. And to you, Michael, who's been talking about be prepared for what comes, we walk a risk every day just getting the hell out of our house and being a black person in America, and males in particular. Black males in America are an endangered damn species, okay? They're the biggest hunting game target that there is. That is the truth. It is what it is. This is not about me doing black supremacy, white supremacy, nothing. It is what it is. okay? Black men are a target in this world. But guess what? Do we sit around and do nothing? Do we sit around and do a darn thing or just fold up and go, I'm just going to take whatever they give me and roll up and die? I have children, so I don't have that option.
Well, like me, I see two ways of accomplishing this task. There's the slow way, and then there's the faster way. The slow way is for me to do the things that I do now. I'm an actuary. I'm from a small town in Georgia. I'm the first person to ever do, to ever be an actuary where I'm from. But I come home, and I talk to these kids, so I try and make sure that I'm not the only actuary to come from where I come from.
Excellent.
Now that's the slow way. The fast way, and I'm not even religious, but the fast way is through the Black Church. The Black Church is the only organization that we truly have that has the depth, resources, and networks already in place for us to accomplish major tasks in an efficient manner.
Good luck with that one.
And I
agree with you.
Well, I'm
going
to say they need to open
points.
Their damn doors back and stop looking for the TV ministries and for them to get their own pooled and multi-million-dollar mansions and do the Lord's work when they're supposed to.
But
I would like to chime in on that just for a little bit, because I am an ordained deacon. I am a member of a small church here in Toledo, Ohio. When you talk about the churches, okay, there are quite a few churches out here that I'm not going to speak against any pastors, I'm not going to speak against any churches, but some of these churches are set up for just themselves, and I'm proud to say I'm not a part of one of those churches, because the pastor of my church, he is very active in the community, and so am I. I'm a community activist, and I work with the troubled youth here in the community. I am an ex-gang member from out of Brownsville, Brooklyn, New York. So I can go out here and get into these streets and talk the talk and walk the walk, because I've been there and I used to be one of them. So when it comes to something like that, I'm kind of cautious And I come from basically a family, a grandmother and mother who were into the church, and I was raised by a church-going family, but I fell away from it as I got older because I didn't want to believe a lot of the stuff that was going on. But eventually when I came back to this church that I'm a member of now, by some reason I got a feeling that I used to get when I used to go to church with my grandmother when I was younger. And I thought I would never get that feeling again. That's why there's nobody that can tell me that there's not a higher power that's in the works of anything that we do in our lives. And if you don't include that higher power in your life, you're not gonna accomplish anything. So now when you talk about going to the churches, you just have to be careful of the churches deal with. That's all I just want to say.
To the point, though, Deacon, I agree with him. The Black Church is one of the most powerful community resources that we have. The problem is, and we've spoken about this before, you and I as well, on and off the air, the Black churches have closed up their doors, churches, period. You don't even need to have a rectory in Catholicism you can go to in the middle of the night anymore. And I'm seeing a lot more of Crespo dollars than I'm seeing, Reverend Smith. So it's true. We are drying up our own. One second. We are drying up our own resources. We are drying up a lot of our own personal links. We are adopting stupid cultures to associate ourselves as unique with. We are creating things with a resourceful mind that end up being silly image projectors. It makes no sense. And for you, Michael, if you are speaking to these children, that's not all you can do, but it's a hell of a step, because that's the generation that counts. You can't teach a lot of old dogs new tricks, but you can teach a new puppy how to do new tricks.
Right.
I've been very, very active in my community and abroad. I used to live in Oakland, California, one of the highest black-on-black crime murder rates in this country.
Absolutely.
So I'm very aware, but what I'm saying is that if we're going to do what we're talking about on this phone, be prepared for repercussions.
No doubt, brother.
Organization down to the Panthers, down to the Nation of Islam, or whoever that's tried to do something for the people have come across very hard. In some cases,
brother,
fatal.
And a lot of times, our own black people backed out from it, and that's the sad part.
Can I address it? I'm sorry. And brother, trust me, I understand. I even mentioned in my lecture that my friends tell me that I'm a marked man just because of the things I do, and I'm out in the community, and I do talk about these things. One of the things we have to do is eliminate this whole system of fear that's within our community to step out and actually be accountable for the things that happen in our community. You know, I do believe that we can overcome this situation rather quickly if we can get to the youth and we teach them, and we teach them. It's not something as simple as teaching them the errors of our, well, we can teach them the errors of our ways, but also teaching them how working together, teaching them that they are beautiful, teaching them that they are loved, and giving them love, and showing them love, not always contradicting them, not always treating them or ostracizing them, but letting them know that they hold the key to our future, and we need to embrace them instead of always being standoffish when we talk about them. And we need to show that we respect their mothers and we respect their fathers, even if their mothers and fathers weren't in the pictures for them, so that they can have an appreciation for parenthood, so that when they have children, they give love and respect and honor to their children the same way we're going to give love and honor and respect to them. Now, when we talk about moving and things of that nature, I'm not talking about holding these type of sessions where we're talking about this out in public. I'm talking about having closed door meetings, just like the Jewish community, where they close up shop and they go and haul to the synagogue every Saturday and have their meetings on how they're going to do things in their community, how they're going to educate their children, and how they're going to move forward and do things. I'm talking about we need to do things in communities. I'm not for being the next great black leader. What I'm saying is we need to have community leaders all across the board so that when you knock one down, there's somebody else ready to step up and take his place. There are people all over the country doing the same thing. I mean, brother, I tell you, we had one video showing a group of brothers doing charity work in a suburb of Philadelphia, a rough suburb of Philadelphia, Chester, Pennsylvania. And that one video has like 2,500 YouTube hits. And not only that, it's been passed along on Facebook, all the other different social media groups. And you should see the responses in terms of people saying, you know what, we want to start stuff like that in our city. How can we get things like that going in our communities? So it's not about to run away from situations. And I'll tell you about one more thing about that whole violent revolution thing that we touched on. The Homeland Security has just purchased 1.6 billion hollow tip bullets. Who do you think they're for? So, you know, we have to figure out a different way to have our revolution.
They know that black people's getting tired of being shot down by police, and that's what I'm saying is that I'm not afraid. What I'm saying to you is that it's going to come. The war is going to come.
Well,
so not,
those bullets aren't just for us.
Honestly,
you recognize.
There hasn't been a revolution for anything since Martin Luther King and Malcolm X anyway. And I'm everything has a place in time. And by no means am I saying that that's us. But something is due to happen. Now, I do want to address something that you said, and we are down to our last few minutes in the show. One of the things that I want to say is you mentioned something, Professor, that I was going to mention in another way. The reason why we don't seem to get up is because we don't give back to ourselves when we get up there. Indians have a fear factor. They were beating the hell out of their land, but they have their own little community and their own government and their own banking systems and their own job systems and their educational system. And guess what? It's not out in India or in some out of the United States terrain somewhere. It's right here in Long Island City, New York. I mean, in Long Island, New York. It's out here in other parts of New York. People leave from other states to go there to buy things cheaper and support their community. And they will give back jobs and schooling and loans and business stuff back to their own people to keep it in their own people. We don't do that. We don't do that. And that is, that is called internal hatred, internal self-destruction. We sometimes are our own weapon of mass destruction.
Internal training.
Gentlemen, people don't realize a lot of Indians are living in poverty on these reservations.
But
you
know what, Michael?
They're
not coming to the United States to down their own to get better.
Not Indians from India. I'm talking about Native Americans.
I know that. They're not leaving the Native Indian community to come to the white government so that they could get assistance and put their own community
down. That's right.
They are dealing with their own struggles within themselves and finding it themselves. Understand, the history of Native Americans was that the white government had the nerve to look at the richness of the land and hated the fact that they valued the nature of earth. They found resources in gold and respected the land and respected the trees. They said that they're savages. Meanwhile, they came in with guns and knives and everything they could think of to get these people out of there and call them civilized. They call us dogs and garbage and everything. And I take a commuter train home every day to see what they act like when they're drunk. They don't give a damn about anything. But we're the savages. And we're the ones that allow them to call us this because we do this to ourselves. We treat ourselves like they treat us. We give ourselves excuses by using a struggle we didn't walk to say that's why we can't take advantage of the opportunities our ancestors lost their life for us to have, regardless to how damn restricted it is, regardless to how much
people
we're not.
People are always talking about the black-on-black crime, and a major reason for it is poverty. And I was saying that these Indians on these reservations are living in poverty, but
they're
not killing
themselves.
They're not killing themselves. The black-on-black crime is the same reason we've been talking about it, that you killed all the black leaders. When you kill all the black leaders in the community, there's no one to lead. All these gangs had leaders, and these leaders kept a lot of these streets in check. When you get rid of the gangs, there's no one to lead.
I do have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but we're down to our last 2 minutes. And I do want to thank every single one of you, those of you that called in and those of you that listened in, because my panel is filled up right now, and I appreciate the support. Black Love and Conversations, Black History Suppressed, Real World Black News and Discussions, Professor Carlton Jones, all of you on the panel this evening. I want to thank those, Patrick Irvine, who's been mixing it up with me back and forth, listening in on the live. Thank you all for this, because even though this is our first steps, it is steps, and it's steps forward, not backwards, and it's not standing in place. So no matter what our views are, what our debates are, we all have the same goal, and eventually we're going to get it, not as slow as we think either, but hit the children up. That's where it counts. Make a difference. Yes. Do something in a different manner that you do daily, and see what little changes make big things happen. Until tomorrow night, everybody, where we will be discussing, you'll see. I'll be letting you know.
Hey,
yes.
Anybody that's interested, the Knicks won again tonight, y'all.
Yes, baby. Go New York. I was watching it, too, and I was there when they beat the Heat. So go New York, go New York, go. All right. Good night, everybody. Have a great one, and God bless you all.
Good night. Blessings
good
unto
night.
You all. Peace unto you, my brothers.
Peace.
Good night, all.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.